Hello, and welcome to Required Reading, the podcast that revisits the most impactful books from our childhood. I'm your host, Erin Bowles. I am a writer, actor, and comedian. And if you'd like to support the podcast, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/requiredreading. Our guest today is Carter Hambly. He is a comedian, writer, and producer who just finished shooting Happy Gilmore 2. Hello.
Hey, Erin, how's it going?
Good. I am so excited. Today's book is from 1986 by Brian Jakes, Redwall, about a tiny mouse warrior.
Redwall. Is that how you say it, Jakes?
I know. I was so disappointed, but I did look it up, and it's not Jacques.
This is horrible for me. I've been saying Jacques plural, which I don't think is right in any country. So this was your first time reading this one?
Yeah, so I wanted to ask if you had any familiarity with the cartoon show, because I had familiarity with that.
No, I've never seen this.
There was a show on PBS that I, up until like Sunday when I was talking to a friend, thought that no one had ever seen it, and she had seen it. And I was like, thank God, I did not, imagine this. But I think the whole show is available on YouTube, and it seems to follow this pretty closely beat for beat, which is interesting.
Oh, I need to watch that. I heard that they were going to do a, like, the people who did Over the Garden Wall were working on doing this for Netflix, but I think that fell through or is in development hell or something. But no, I mean, it's such a, like, easy one to adapt. You think it would be so good in like 50-minute episode format.
Absolutely. And this wasn't in the I saw this on Wikipedia because I didn't see it on YouTube, and it sounds vaguely familiar that the show was like bookended by interviews with Jakes, like answering questions from viewers, which sounds very PBS. I was a big PBS
kid. I'm sure the kids
kid.
Loved when the Jolly Frenchman sat in front of the television.
Exactly.
Questions. Can I say, did you have a lot of questions about this book? And when you finish this book, do you feel like you needed to write a letter to him?
No.
Okay, so this is your first time reading Redwall.
I'm
trying to think, the first time I read Redwall was probably elementary school. I grew up in Kansas, and so I went to a very small elementary school where there were like 10 kids per class. So there were like 90 kids in the whole school. And so like very tiny library. I remember seeing this cover and being like, well, I gotta read that because I've read everything else. It was a lot of Hank the Cow Dog. And then this, and I remember reading this one and thinking, I was like, wow, this is like the hardest book ever. Like, I thought it was like Lord of the Rings. I remember thinking that for years until like maybe a year ago, I was in a Barnes & Noble and I saw Redwall, and I was like with a friend, and I was like, man, it's crazy because like this book is not for kids at all. And then I picked it up and I opened to page one and I was like, oh, this is so clearly for children. But it's so I love the way he writes is so funny.
Yeah, it's really vivid. I know that I did a tiny bit of research going into it, and I know when he first sent it to a publisher, I think they were like, this is way too long, that we cannot do this length. But I wanted to talk a little bit about 86 and Jakes. 1986, this is the UK and France announced that they're going to build the Chunnel. Chernobyl disaster. It's the year of Top Gun, Phantom of the Opera, Challenger explodes on live television. And the band Sweet Children was formed, which is now Green Day.
Oh, wow. That's so, I assume he wrote this over a long time, right? I don't know. This feels like a thing that a guy had in his notebook for a long time. I don't know if that's me projecting or.
The original Redwall manuscript was 800 pages handwritten.
That's like a manifesto. That is.
I know.
That's so crazy because like the plot of this book is not what you come to this book for. I could tell you the plot of this book in about three sentences. It's very simple. And 90% of the main plot points, I don't know if you agree, happen in the last 30 pages.
Yes.
Truly is like they achieve everything in the last 30 pages. And the middle is him describing food mainly.
Yes. For those who don't know this book, Redwall is about a bunch of mice who live in an abbey called Redwall. And little Matthias, our hero, is obsessed with the ancient Martin the Warrior, who's on this tapestry. And there's a rat and some bad guys who want to take over. And Matthias and his family and his friends at the abbey say no.
And they say no.
And that's kind of it.
And they say no. And it's a lot of animals, and it's kind of like, it's funny because in like Lord of the Rings, you have like orcs are bad. And this, like the good ones and the bad ones don't really line up with what you would think from an animal. Like there's a snake who's bad, but like badgers can be good or badgers can be bad. Like it doesn't really track. It's like rats are bad, mice are good, which I guess makes sense. But it's just a lot of weird woodland creatures that all have different alliances. They all live, yes, in an abbey. And they're all like seemingly very religious, but also they have no religion. Am I wrong, or do they never mention religion?
No, you're right. And Redwall is a series. It's like a 22 book series.
I saw that the last one he wrote was 2011.
Yeah. This is the copy that I've had since I was a kid that I've just never read and finally did. And I also had, I had a copy of the second book and a copy of another book. So I looked at the second book, just be like, okay, does this pick up? You know, they set up that he has a kid and things like that. It's like centuries before. This is just completely, I think it's of Martin the Warrior.
Because there's the ones that take place like 300 years before. And then there's ones that take place like 100 years after. And it's like nothing really changes because it's the woods. Society's not different. They all still live in like a little church. But yeah.
It seems like someone on Wikipedia tried to be like, okay, what time in the human world does this take place? And it seems like Jakes wrote this first book and was like, don't ask about humans. Just don't, we're not answering that question. That doesn't exist here.
Because they don't really, well, they don't have cars. So that probably helps.
No, they have wheels. Yeah.
They have wheels. They have big wheels. They have small wheels. I think that's literally it. They have pots and pans. That's what's getting mentioned a lot, is like copper pots. That's the main thing. This book opens with a jubilee. And it's just like I have my copy. Like, are you familiar with there's a Twitter like bot account that just tweets out the excerpts of just the food from, from these books? It's a very fun follow, but like the language, like I remember in the first one, he's just describing like stuff that would not sound appetizing to a child, like at all. But I remember being like, this sounds great. I never had shrimp, but I remember like he's describing tender freshwater shrimp garnished with cream and rose leaves. And you're like, as a child, that's not what you want to eat. But I remember being like, that sounds awesome. And I'd never had shrimp ever.
I had never had shrimp until maybe sometime in the last 5 years, because I grew up not eating meat. But my mother once, it's my favorite thing to say. My mother once had the all-you-can-eat shrimp at IHOP, and she got deathly ill.
IHOP does that?
They
Wait,
did
what,
once.
What form are they in? Are they like, I can never...
Not pancakes, certainly.
She's like on a plate? That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wait, how many did she have?
She loves shrimp. She really,
I get it. That's a deal. That's a deal too. Well, that's so funny. Wait, so shrimp now, pro or con?
Pro, very pro. They're delicious. Yeah.
No, I remember
you?
My first time with shrimp was when I was about, it was like 12 or 13, and I had one, and I remember like, I was like, I felt it swim, and I did not, but I remember like throwing up, and my mom was like, okay, well, you're not having any more of those. Like, those are too expensive for you to be doing that. We live in Kansas. This is not readily available. And so I truly did not have shrimp until, maybe a year ago was like when I got back. But no, the way he writes in this book about food is like, I can't think of any other books where there's so much attention is paid to what they're eating. It's like how my mom would talk about like Robert Pattinson's hands is how he is describing food in this. Very much what Brian
They're always talking about what Cornflower, the girl mouse, is bringing to everyone on the rounds from the kitchen when they're on, when they're waiting.
Yeah, Cornflower, kind of the real MVP of this book. She's like the love interest of our main character and is always in the kitchen. In the last battle, they're talking about it and they're like, and also Cornflower is making oatmeal. Like, truly as an aside, we're like, yes, they are storming the gates, but also she's making a lovely flatbread that will be served later this evening.
Which is kind of nice, I think, because there's like no sexism in it. It's like that truly is the most important job in our community.
No, it is funny where like, I think it's like her and then like an old man and they're both like just both in the kitchen. Yeah, it truly is like, It is funny how weirdly progressive these books are in terms of structure of society. It does feel very much like a weird, like a hippie commune more than anything else. Yeah, they describe them as like father and like they act like monks. But yeah, there's no God, no religion. They're just truly all there to hang out in a church and eat.
Yeah, and it seems like they have this mythical Jesus. I don't know. They have this mythical
Yeah.
Martin the Warrior figure.
Yeah. Who is like historical and very much was real. And he's like, and he lived here, which is also weird. It wasn't like he lived somewhere else. He very much like was here. And then they're like, but nobody has fought since that guy. Yeah. The main character obviously sees this tapestry and is like, I got to get like him. And I love the main character. I love that he's always tripping. He's like
over his
falling.
big sandals.
Yes. He's wearing sandals. He's always like, yeah, in flip flops, tripping. And I remember as a kid, I fell a lot. And I remember being like, well, it's cool to see a character who is always eating shit a little bit. And while collecting hazelnuts is always nice to see.
Yes. Very good at fishing. Yeah.
Very good at fishing. And then incredibly good at fighting with no practice or experience.
Yes.
Which I have to respect.
There was a point fairly early on where they're like, oh, you're him reincarnated. And there's no questioning. They're just like, we know this and we understand this. Let's get you a shield. You know, and then
no,
they start going
it's
scavenger hunting. Yeah.
Just accept that you're that guy who's born again. That's so.
And we know like nothing else about him. Yeah.
No, he really doesn't have that many. Nobody in this, I will say, has that many character traits in a way that is almost crazy looking back at, except for our villain Clooney, who is just like the most, like the first appearance is him shoving one of his own guys under a wagon, and then they go like, and his blood goes everywhere, and that's like the end of the chapter. It's just him like shoving his like own buddy under a wagon and dying.
I see why you, as a child, said that this was metal, because like people do die. There are like big fight scenes.
There's a body count, in this book. It's which is kind of crazy.
Yes. And a substantial one, like only like one or two of the good guys die, but they move through like every single henchman.
There is a lot of room for advancement in that enemy army, because every chapter opens with like, anyways, Cheese Thief has a giant arrow in his chest and we're all gathered around him, which first of all, love that there's a guy named Cheese Thief.
Oh my God.
I think that's great, which isn't really, that's not really a naming system in this. It's just that one guy has a name like that.
Yes. There's like Rag Ear, Fang, Red Tooth.
And the rest of them just sound vaguely Christian. The rest of them do just sound like a large Mormon family. Chicken Hound, also Chicken Hound.
It was one of the foxes. Yes.
Yeah. Well,
I have to say my favorite. Yes, go for it.
Yes, no. Your favorite name, I have to know.
Oh, well, my favorite character is this little baby squirrel who never speaks and is always sucking on his paw, Silent Sam.
Yep. Silent Sam, who in the last chapter, the epilogue, is like, he talks, right? Don't they say that he talks? Yeah. And that's
suddenly
and that's
he like
big,
will not shut up. Yeah.
That's a big mic drop. As a Silent Sam has spoken. Wait, okay. As a person who's reading this for the first time, I have to know, what was the pace of this book like for you?
This was so slow. This is the first book where I've had to like skim. It was really bad. I was like, I gotta get through it.
I remember as a child being like, this is such a gripping read. And I think it was because I didn't have a job and I didn't have anything to do and I had nowhere to be. It's funny because in like Lord of the Rings, which feels like the closest parallel for this.
Yeah, they reference it explicitly in a review on the back of mine. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. It's very much like the way the fantasy is laid out and everything. But the main thing is that like in Lord of the Rings, a ton of stuff is always happening. And in this book, it's a lot of people, like, first of all, the bad guys are trying to get into the church from like page 10. And so it's just climbing ladders almost over and over and being like, well, that did not work. Let's try a different ladder. And so every other chapter is just them coming back to being like mildly thwarted. And then, or walking around in the woods. That was a big thing I noticed on the reread. I'm not going to lie.
Yes. A good book for children learning siege tactics. Definitely.
Yes. Yes. Very much so, where you're like, okay, I guess a pour boiling oil on him. Like, it's very intense. They're not like very, they're not like
Yes.
childish. They don't just bonk him on the head. It is a lot of like, intense war games happening and like trenches. And yeah, and everyone in the church is like really ready for it.
Yes. Even though they have not fought since Martin, they're ready. They handle it well.
And they do seem like they're psyched to be fighting. They're really excited to be fighting. And I get it. To be fighting and be on the justified side probably feels incredible.
Oh, yeah. It actually makes so much sense that, because I looked into Jake's a little bit. I mean, he's born in England, in Liverpool, in 1939. So it makes sense that his sort of conception of childhood is war and food, because food was probably extremely scarce. And war is sort of the only thing around. But he has this incredible stretch of jobs before he like settles into being a writer. I just have to list them. Merchant sailor, railway
that's the
fireman.
First one?
Yes. And when I looked on Wikipedia, it was like he left school at 15 to become a merchant sailor, which was normal, which was normal.
Where is a 15-year-old? What is a 15-year-old going to do on a boat?
It would have been 1955 for England. So it's, I don't know, something colonial. I don't
He's
know.
He's going to fall and hit his head like Barry Keoghan in Dunkirk. That's the only job for a 15-year-old on a boat, is to get a concussion and die. Okay, merchant sailor. Yeah. What else?
Railway fireman.
Again, not a job I want a 16-year-old coming to help me buy if a train is on fire. Okay.
Longshoreman. Which, frankly, I don't know what that is.
I feel like that's a boat thing, too. That also feels like...
Long-distance truck driver, bus driver.
Okay.
Postmaster, stand-up entertainer.
He did stand-up?
And the last one, which pulls into his writing career, milkman.
Wow, I like that he did one entertainment-based job, and after seven jobs on a boat or dealing with fire, he's like, you know what? I got to hit the club circuit. I got to go to the Funny Bone in Cincinnati and describe food on stage before Andrew Dice Clay comes out and obliterates me. That is so – and then Milkman. And Milkman's in England?
Yes. So he's going on his rounds. He passes the Royal Wavertree School for the Blind and befriends all of these children. So he's volunteering to read to them, and he's like, this shit sucks. There's so much, quote, angst in them. So he starts writing stories, and because they're visually impaired, he writes them with, like, extremely descriptive style and emphasizing sounds and smells and tastes. And those stories that he writes for them grow into 800-page handwritten manuscript for Redwall.
That's so funny, because that is like adorable, and it's like amazing, and it's like it's so cool that you're making a story for these people who are like, don't have a sense, and you're trying to make up for it with your flowery language. But it is weird to inadvertently be like, and listen, because you are blind, I've written for you one of the most boring books of all time. it's also like, hey, they're kids too. I bet they would love to just like have some action happen, and probably like, I can't imagine they're on the edge of their seat for the tender shrimp portion of the book.
I need to know their reviews of it. Yeah, because
I would love to know. And also, like, I want to know what the teachers thought of the milkman bending down on a stoop and telling these children how good rosemary, mint, and thyme are together mixed into a tea. I would be like, okay, man, you gotta go. We gotta teach them everything.
It's the early 80s. Who knows? You know?
The 80s in England, which you know this man was dressed crazy. There's no way that this milkman in the 80s, who was a longshoreman, a long-haul bus driver, or long-haul trucker, and then, he's wearing the worst hat of all time, for sure.
Wikipedia picture, you can't tell if he's, like, laughing or crying. I'll send it to you.
I love that. I've, like, kind of avoided finding out what this man looks like. Okay. Oh man, he looks like he would kill you with a knife. This
Yes,
is
there is
crazy.
something like Batista about him.
Yeah, no, he's like for those playing along at home, he is bald, he has a white goatee, and like it's constantly kind of having a little beret sort of situation, or like a flat brim hat that is straight down over his eyes. And wait, I haven't seen the specific. What's the specific photo you're sending
Oh,
me?
on his Wikipedia.
Oh, on his Wikipedia. Oh, let me look.
Yeah,
Wikipedia.
because the Wikipedia pictures are always terrible. They're always doing people dirty.
Oh, this one is. No, this one is like. This is crazy. This feels like he's having a colonoscopy and someone burst the door down, took a photo, and uploaded it to the internet. Is like. I can't. He looks like what's his Brian Cox from Succession is very much
Yes,
what he looks like
exactly.
in this. Okay, so he did die in 2011. I'm just finding this out. I'm crying. I start sobbing uncontrollably. He meant so much to me. No, but I mean, rest in peace. Obviously, love to his family. But he didn't. Did he write any? I'm trying to figure out if he wrote anything other than Redwall. It says he completed two collections of short stories. One is called "The Ribbajack and Other Curious Yarns."
Yeah, I'm seeing The Castaways of the Flying Dutchman series and Seven Strange and Ghostly Tales.
I do love that he has the worst website of all time. It looks like
Oh, of course he does.
a flash game, like that. It also looks. It's like, you know, when the background of a website used to look like parchment paper, that's what it looks like. It looks like you spilled tea all over this website. And I think it's so cool that the Redwall website has like home, about Brian, shop, and then obituaries.
Yes.
I think it's always nice when you're, as a children's author, you have an obituaries section.
I have to find out, is it for Brian or for, oh, it's
Now,
for Brian. It's not for
definitely one of
characters.
them is for Brian, but then
Yeah.
another one is for Andy, and who I think is just a child who loved Redwall, but the
Oh.
rest, which is very sweet. I do forget these books. Like, you meet a person who loves these books, and they are obsessed with these books. They truly
Yes.
like, will go off about them, and I think it's because they haven't reread them. Like me,
Yeah.
I will say largely of like, I got it. I was so psyched to reread this one, and I started into it, and I was like, awesome, love it, just how I remember. And then, yeah, truly for almost, and this is, yeah, this book is, my copy is at the font size, and I mean, 351 pages. That's not a small book, especially for a child, or for anyone now, even, because I opened like this book, I didn't know where my copy was, so I was like, oh, I'll order another one. It arrived and it's thick. And I was like, okay, cool. But the font is probably huge. And then I opened it up and it is, if anything, smaller than average.
Mine is an inch thick, which I think is maybe why I never read it as a kid, because it was so thick and daunting. And even though I was a very academic child, I had a very small attention span, which is valid.
I just want to stop the pod to say that is valid. And wait, what's your relationship with like fantasy books in general though, Aaron?
Yeah.
Do you like a fantasy, or are you?
Yes. So my foundational, most core of core texts is Wizard of Oz. So yes,
Okay.
fantasy good. But there are, throughout the podcast, there have been a lot of fantasy books about small mice, surprisingly. And there are just better ones. Like I was really into the
Think of
Tale of
another one.
Despero.
Oh, Tale
Tale
of
of,
Despero. Yes, that's a classic.
yes. I think specific to Redwall, there was a graphic novel series called Mouse Guard that I
Oh yeah,
think
man.
was what I wanted Redwall to be. And
Yeah.
I think that's also just like the virtue of being a graphic novel
For
and the format
sure.
is different. We just love mice for
Yeah, I mean,
children.
you want to root for a mouse. A mouse winning is always good, and a rat winning is always bad. I mean, did you ever read Geronimo
Yes.
Stilton?
Yes, I
Yes.
collected them more than I read them, but I had so many.
To be fair, there's like seven words in each book. They're not really like complicated books, because the main thing I remember about those is that they played with font. Is it's a lot of like, if he's talking about Swiss cheese, you better be damn sure that that font looks like Swiss cheese. And I think almost every book should do that. I think
Yes.
Yeah, I think that smutty books should have letters that are gooey and dripping. That's what I think.
Ooh.
And I think it benefits from that. Or not. You know, actually, I take it back. I take it back. I think books are good the way they are.
I mean, publishers, we have an idea for you.
Guys, you know, pre-wedded, these books come soaking.
Disgusting.
No. I do you take good care of your books? That is a genuine question I wanted to ask you today. Are you one that bend the pages just in terms of
Yeah.
loving a book?
I am a huge fan of used books. So I like when a physical book carries a story in addition to the story that it tells, right? I love to underline. I love to highlight. I love to put some tabs in there. I love it. I love to just like look back and say, what did I take as important from this? What about you?
Yeah, I love to do that. I love to mark up a book is great. I used to be so like as a child, I would never like dog ear a book. I wanted to keep every book like in pristine condition. And then I feel like as I get older, I'm like, oh no, it's cooler the more you're able to like interact with a book as much as you can. Were you underlining a lot in this book specifically?
No,
I was gonna
not
say
at all.
I just saw a glimpse of your book and I'm like, not seeing a lot of tabs or highlights on this.
No, none at all.
It does introduce about 500 identical characters one by one. And that, like,
There's
over
some
time,
fun ones,
there are
but
some great
yeah.
ones. And there are some great ones. Like, I do want to give him credit. Like, whenever there's a big, the sparrow is fun. Yeah, it does very much feel like he can't imagine meeting a person who isn't either religious, evil, or in the army. Those are like the only three
Well,
types of people in this book.
and maybe in Liverpool in the what 50s, 40s, maybe
Yeah.
that's
Yeah, where are the Beatles at this time? He probably hadn't met them yet.
Oh, the first Beatles album. I don't know how to type, apparently.
This, I will say this.
1963.
Okay. Well, this book would be way better as a Beatles song. And
Oh.
I think they would love to have a John Lennon should be singing about Cheese Thief. Just for one track, get it out of the system. But it is funny to finish this 300. I can't even imagine what the 800-page manuscript was. Cause like, well, I can't even imagine. It must have just been adjectives.
Yes. I flipped it open to a random page, and the first thing my eye saw was the word driblets.
I like that. And there's a lot of verbs I don't know. Like they keep saying poleaxing, and they say that like four times, and I'm like, I guess that just means stabbing a guy. But it is like, it is not, it's clearly only for children, but also actively hostile to everything a child loves and holds dear, which I hate to be like showing my hand on what I think of this book. I truly still love all the things I remembered loving about
Yeah.
it. It's just from a sheer structural perspective, you're like, I don't know if this guy has like been just books have been described to him, but I don't think anyone made him sit down and start to finish read a book or read his book.
Know he was very like not anti-technology, but he was an old man who was like, let me keep my typewriter forever and ever, was that sort of type. He also, I just
Yeah.
have to point this out. So his first name is James Brian Jakes. His
Okay.
father and his younger brother are also all named James.
There were two Jameses, and his dad was also named James.
Yeah, they have three children, and it's Anthony, James, and James.
This really does track for me because when you read this book, you are like, this is written by a man who hugs his mother for a really long time, like every day. Like every single day, like you watch and you go like, that's a little much. And he seems like so full of love in a way that is scary almost. And he does it is this is a book about like good and evil, but in such a way where there's almost no themes or takeaways. It's just
No.
good guys are good and bad guys are bad. Like I was trying to think today, I'm like, what is this book about? And there's I did you have anything?
No. I
No.
think like it's really telling when your villain's motto, the thing he repeats the most when going into battle is kill, kill, kill. You're sort of like, that's it, isn't it? I
I'm not
got
gonna lie, that would scare the hell out of me though. If
it. I know.
a guy was about to fight me and he yelled, kill, 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 I would be scared. I would be so scared. like yesterday, I'm in New York right now, and we went to the Met, and they have Henry VIII's armor, and Henry VIII, a big fellow, and I cannot articulate how scary it is to see a big like a chunky knight is like so much more terrifying than just a normal knight. It is like I was looking at the thin knights, and I'm like, yeah, that would suck. Yeah. One of those guys, but man, the idea of just a barrel figured knight coming
out, yeah,
scarier than anything else. And I do think this book does capture that of like it would suck to fight a fox.
Yes, or Constance the Badger. She's always described very lovingly, but it is like, do not come within a foot of this woman if you want to test her. Like this is not a safe person to be around if you're gonna do mischief. And I was relieved she lived. Yeah, that she was never threatened. I would have been affected if she died.
Many of the characters in this book never threatened, even remotely.
Never.
A lot of it is. It is truly just an Abbot Mortimer, who is like the sweetest character in this book. Is just like the loving patriarch of the Abbey, and like believes so much in the main character. And then he dies by poison.
Clooney is using his tail as a whip, like little Indiana Jones, and I think has a poison barb on it that, I mean, it's tricky because I think the tail gets cut like halfway through the battle, and then the battle ends, and we come back and he is still dying, but I guess that's how poison works.
He's still dying on the floor, and I love the part where he's dying because he gets so much done while he's laying there.
So much.
He truly, everyone gathers around him, and he requests like 10 separate things. Like one of them being like, he's like, okay, you're going to replace me. He's like, okay, you don't get to be part of the Brotherhood. And then everyone gasps, and he goes, because you are the knight that protects us, kind of a, which is to be dying of poison and to do a like, I gotcha. It's kind of crazy because you could have just, maybe you died.
You might not have had the time. You might not have said the punchline.
Also, you two have to get married.
Yes.
Matthias and Cornflower.
A warrior needs a good wife.
Behind every warrior is an even stronger woman.
And he also gives them a house. He says the old gatehouse will be extended into a proper home. It belongs to you both. Guard our threshold wisely and well. He's really, like Jakes, the author, really doing some scene painting. I see the most beautiful summer morning of my life. The sun shines warmly upon us. Nature is ready to yield her bounty again in plenty this autumn.
I don't know. Like, it's nice of him to give them the house, but I do feel like they spent the entire book being like, it is so cool to live in this abbey. And then to be like, and your reward is you do not get to live in this abbey. You get to live in a shed that
over
is
there
and protect the awesome abbey. I assume you can come and go as you please, but I do like that the epilogue immediately goes 1 year later. They have an adorable chunky son, and he loves to pick up the sword at 1 year old.
And then, and I hate the sword's name.
He names it while he's dying also.
Yes, rat death.
Yeah, while he's dying, he goes, oh, and by the way, your sword shall be known far and wide as Rat Death. And I was like, I don't think the dying guy should be named sword. That is weird. Because, like, I mean, again, Lord of the Rings, he names it Sting, which is a way cooler name for a sword than Rat Death.
But frankly, I hate that. A detail from Lord of the... not having read the books, only having seen the movies many, many times, I do hate that the sword is named Sting.
If you had a sword, what would you name it, Aaron?
Oh... So I think I would give it a human name, but I think it would be, I don't, something, just because it's in this book, Constance is calling to me. I don't know.
But that's like an ethereal sword. Like that is like, that's honestly a lightsaber name. Constance, a lightsaber named Constance. That's pretty good.
Maybe, what would you name a sword?
Mudflap. I don't know. I think that's just what I'd name a dog. I think I would, like, I'd have a sword named Cooper or something. And I don't think it's good. I think maybe fundamentally what we're finding out is that swords shouldn't have names. And maybe
it's really hard to name a sword better than Excalibur.
They kind of hit a home run with Excalibur. Do people name their bats in baseball? You don't hear of a lot of people like naming their tools like that, I feel like. Excalibur, the only famous sword I can even think of. But he does this whole book is like you have to find the back half of this book is like you have to find this sword.
Yes.
You need to find this sword, it'd be awful. And then he gets to the place and they keep talking about how it's guarded by this snake. And he gets like within three pages, he finds the sword and kills the snake within truly 2.5 pages. It really moves
Yeah.
quickly. It wastes no time at the end of it.
Yeah. We spend the whole book first trying to find the shield and then the scabbard and then the sword. And there's a lot of riddles and scavenger hunts, which I think I
Yes.
would have enjoyed more when I was young. Speaking of PBS,
Yeah.
I loved the show Fetch with Ruff Ruffman,
Fetch
which
with
was
Ruff
also
Ruffman. Now
very good.
that is a te that's television. Yeah, because as a kid you love a riddle, but then like you grow up and you read the Da Vinci Code and you're like, oh, okay, I guess that's what a grown-up riddle is involves history or something, and like an albino guy with a chastity belt on. Like that's what you need for an adult riddle to be interesting. And then no, they're very simple. Yeah, it solves it almost immediately. And yeah, I don't know. I feel bad being like, man, this book for kids is really boring to me as an adult, that is like I heard that about 5 minutes ago. I'm like, I don't know, maybe just go the book for kids, maybe should just be for kids who love it. It's like, but I think my niece is 11 now. And we like, and I'd give her like recommendations and I'll buy her books and stuff like that. I don't think I'd give her this book because like I'm just imagining a child being like, oof, my uncle really, it meant a lot to him that I read this. So I guess I'm going to really fight uphill on it. Yeah.
What books have you given her? Yeah, that like you have felt good about.
Oh, that's Phantom Tollbooth. Phantom Tollbooth.
Oh, yeah. I'm waiting for someone to do that on this.
I
Yeah.
love that book. I should have done that book because that book
You
is
can come
awesome.
back and do it.
That book is so funny. That book is so like it's so funny and clever, and I think it's like so imaginative and truly has its own like little world. And like that, I think is amazing. And like Redwall is so funny because like you said, it's like a book where you go. I think there's 10 different versions of this that are better that you could name off of the top of your head. But that said, it is amazing that he wrote like 20, and I don't know how much you know
Yeah.
about them. I've read a lot of them. They all have the
I
exact same
don't. Oh
They all basically have the exact same plot of like we need a warrior, and then they find the warrior, and then he wins the fight. Like that is exactly what the prequel about him is, about
Oh.
Martin is. And then some of them, the same thing happens but on a boat, and that's the main difference.
Well, I do love a boat,
This book would be
but
better if it had some water in it. This book would also be better, can I say, if it had a gorilla, if it had a monkey,
that's true.
it would be more interesting. There was like, what, the most interesting animal in this is what, an owl?
I really liked, I wouldn't have liked him if I knew him personally, but I really liked Basil the Hare, Basil
Oh,
probably.
yes. Fun guy to hear stories about, not a guy you want to be in the group project with, for sure.
Definitely class clown, but like pulls it off, pulls off a lot of heists.
Did pull it off, did get a shout out in the epilogue. The epilogue, by the way, is 1 page long and they list every single name almost that was in this book. He really leaves no stone unturned and is just like, by the way, all of them are friends. They're all eating. And
Yes.
he even describes food in the epilogue, in the like half the like 1 page epilogue. He talks about the
Yeah,
type
because
of
they're
steak.
getting ready for another feast. Yeah.
I will say he should have written a cookbook because I would buy his cookbook
Yes.
in a heartbeat. I would tell you
Someone
what,
must have made that.
that has to
It does
exist, right?
exist. It does
Okay. I was
exist.
gonna say,
It does
otherwise we should
exist.
make a quick $100 and write that book.
And it's illustrated. Very
Oh,
cute.
this book would also benefit from pictures. I say, sounding like the dumbest guy in the world, but a picture would have saved my life in this book.
Does yours have little tiny images at the beginning of each
Yes.
chapter?
And I love those. Okay, I will say the Redwall cookbook looks incredible. This
Yeah.
cover is gorgeous.
It reminds me of like Strega
I can't imagine making
Nona.
any of these for anyone I love. Like I like going like doing like date night and being like, babe, do you want to come over while I make Mole's favorite deeper and ever turnip and tater beetroot pie? Is not, I don't know, that would be romantic.
Outside and inside cobbler riddle. What does
It's a
that mean?
cobbler riddle.
Cobbler riddle? I'm looking at
What?
it on Amazon.
I love to be confused by food. I love to be like, I have no idea what's happening. I'm scared. I would have loved if Ryan Jakes was like had a sh like a cooking show or whatever,
Oh
or
my
like
God.
traveled around and everyone fed the like bald man with the goatee and he just
Yeah.
talked. I would love an Anthony Bourdain style show with this old
Yes.
British long haul trucker. Would have been
Yes.
enthralling. But then he found out about mice and that really set him on a path. Did he like mice? Was there anything, any reference of that, of love for animals?
Something that Wikipedia mentioned was The Wind in the Willows, which is a novel about like a mole and a rat and a badger and Mr. Toad. He liked Sir Thomas Malory, who wrote it's La Morte d'Arthur, which I hate to say French words because that makes me sound like an asshole. But yeah,
No.
he like his he liked that and like Daniel Defoe and Arthur Conan Doyle, which I mean, maybe it's just it sounds really stuffy.
But yeah, but it is funny because Arthur Conan Doyle, that guy can write a riddle. So it is kind of beautiful to be like, I'm a long haul trucker. I like these four guys. I'm gonna combine them with my love of food and make a book that is, it's gonna be great if you're under 10. Or wait, I don't know. What
Yeah.
do you think is the ideal age to read this book?
Oh, I have no
Because like
idea.
it's, you can't give it to like an 8-year-old, I don't
No.
think. But you also, if you give it to a 13-year-old, they will punch you. Like this is so there's maybe like a 3-month span of every person's life where this book is ideal to read.
It's a very specific kind of child. Yeah. But
Yes.
here's a little anecdote I wanted to mention, because it happens every once in a while to different children who become writers. At age 10, assigned to write an animal story, he wrote about a bird that cleaned a crocodile's teeth. His teacher could not believe that a 10-year-old wrote it and caned him for refusing to admit copying the story.
He got whooped?
He got whooped
Wow.
for it.
For being such a precocious young boy. I don't know about you, Aaron. I've heard a lot of stories about like a bird cleaning a crocodile's teeth and then like, oh, the crocodile's gonna eat him, but then he doesn't. Like, I feel like I could 1,000% believe that a 10-year-old boy wrote that.
Yeah. I wrote a story like that when I was maybe 6, and it got in the little silly school writing
Oh.
publication, and I
Did anyone
thought I was a genius, you know?
beat your ass for it?
No, but I will
Oh.
say my mom is from this really small town in Kentucky, and her dad was like the historian for the town. So every time she would write a history paper, they would like automatically fail her, being like, "Your dad wrote this." And she's like, "No, I independently also really like history."
No. Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah.
Oh, that stinks. That's so funny. It's also so funny to just be like, a 10-year-old boy would never write about two animals being friends. It's like,
Two
it's so.
unlikely animals being friends?
Yeah, like if
Never.
he was writing Pride and Prejudice and was just like, oh, this love between two
Yeah.
houses is very complicated and neither of them will give, then I'd understand a spank. Now thinking about this, I'm like, oh, that makes a lot of sense of like him getting caned for writing about animals and then made him like spurnfully be like, I'm gonna show her by writing about animals so much that actually everyone will want me to stop writing about animals. I assume that his children must have resented him a little bit of like if
Yeah.
you, it's that thing of I feel like if your dad writes a children's book, he's probably really gonna want to read that book to you.
Yes. Well, he has two children. I looked this up. So his son, Mark, is a carpenter and bricklayer, and his other son is a contemporary artist and muralist. And that
Okay.
sounds about right.
Sounds like very, very normal, well-adjusted
Yeah.
occupations.
Jake's father was a truck driver. They're all very, very like working class, blue collar
Okay,
Liverpool.
cool. That is so interesting because I feel like it is almost this book is so like hoity-toity fancy that it is somebody trying to just be like, oh, I've always longed for
Yeah.
being in high society, and so I am going to write about a bunch of people having afternoon tea. Meanwhile, I'm like hauling 3 tons of imitation crab across England.
Yeah. There's one other thing about the publication. He is an artist in residence at this theater for a while, and he becomes friends with this English teacher. and co-founder of the theater. So he gives the friend the manuscript, and the friend sends it to a publisher and says, quote, "This is the finest children's tale I've ever read, and you'd be foolish not to publish it." And then the publisher said, "Come in. Here's a contract for this and five more books from that 800-page handwritten manuscript."
That is, wow. Five more?
Five more.
Five more. And did it say how much he got paid?
I'm not seeing it, no.
Yeah, I feel like it's like maybe they gave him $20 and they were like, this will keep him busy.
This will keep my friend who I read this for as a favor.
800 pages of handwriting. I assume that the long haul trucker probably doesn't have the best handwriting. Maybe that's me and my assumptions about long haul trucking and longshoremanship. But I would be like, I don't know, type it up. If you want me to read 800 pages, maybe we type it up. It feels like bare minimum.
That would not fly in today's publishing world. It feels like one of those things where, like, when I was in film school, one of our professors was, you know, prepping us. We were about to graduate. And he's like, you know what? Just go into Paramount and just sit down at a desk and start doing work. And one day they'll pay you for it. Don't even ask for a job. Just show up and do it. And we had to be like, no, that doesn't work. And he was like, that's how I did in the 50s. And we're like, yeah, that was the 50s. That does not work anymore.
But I'm even like, what work can you do at a desk that you are not talking to anybody about is like other than truly just like typing keys on a keyboard?
We had like student mentors who had like recently graduated. And so there was one who happened to be in town like that day or that week. And so we pulled her aside and we're like, this is what he just told us to do. What do you think? And she said, they will arrest you.
And also, you'd have to bring your own desk. They don't just have a ton of empty desks laying around.
No.
That's my only issue with that, is that you should also do that, and also you should bring your own desk. Yeah, and a hat, and a fun hat, so everyone knows that you're not afraid to stand out from the crowd. That's so, no, it is funny that I do love every story that's just like, and I slid my script under like Louis B. Mayer's door, and then they made it. Okay, so you're Rosetta Stone for fantasy being Wizard of Oz. I have to ask, Wicked Big for you right now?
I posted a couple of videos about this. I like will cut people out of my life if they say negative things about it. I think it's spectacular. I'm a huge fan of the L. Frank Baum books, who's the original author. Wicked is based on a four-part series, which I love. Very different from the musical. All very understandable. I wept beginning to end, and it was like, I get to go back to Oz, and I didn't think I ever would get to, you know? It was incredible.
No, it was great. It was so much fun. Wait, when's the second one? The second one comes out, what, in a year?
Yeah, like next Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Amazing. No, those books are so good. The L. Frank Baum ones. I've never read the Wicked series, which I assume, having read what happens in book one, I have no conceivable notion of what could possibly happen in three books after that.
Yeah. So book two is about her son. She has a son with Fiero. Book three is about the Cowardly Lion. And then book four is about her granddaughter, the son's daughter.
Okay. So the Cowardly Lion one is just an outlier.
Not really. Like, there's some tangential. So, like, her son has a half-sister that ends up marrying the Cowardly Lion, but they're in an asexual marriage because of some trauma that happened to her when she was held captive. But these are dark books, and they're really complicated. And the Cowardly Lion in those books has a name, and it's Burr, as in cold.
I love that, though. These are very dark books about the trauma, and because of that, obviously their relationship is not going to have physical intimacy at this moment. And then, like, by the way, his name's Burr because he's like
because he's chilly,
like he's cold.
he's shivering because he's scared. Yeah, the third book kind of like goes back to, because he makes an appearance in the Wicked film, to that and kind of catches up. Those books are wild. I love that author. I love Gregory Maguire. There's some bad stuff in it. Like the whole thing is like using animals as an allegory for people of color.
Yeah,
pretty heavy handed. But his heart's in a good place.
No, I have to read those because the movie was great. Mm-hmm. I love the L. Frank Baum books. There's also a really great, speaking of graphic novels, there's a really great graphic novel adaptation of Wizard of Oz, illustrated by Scotty Young. That's one of the ones that
Oh, nice.
saved my knees. And that one's like amazing if you have any young people that want a book in your life. That one's so good.
Yeah,
And
I want
also,
to look
and
at it.
Redwall. And please give Redwall to everyone you know, and the next 20 books. I really
Both.
Do. Ultimately, I do love this book in that it exists. And it's also just such a fascinating example of like what not to do with a book, and that an editor should tell a guy no. Because if this book was
Yeah.
if this book was 150 pages, it would
Oh my
rip.
God. I don't think like being a book editor is a college major anywhere, probably, but this would be the assignment. Would just be like, dude, come back with a
Yes.
third of this
Yes,
and
exactly.
I'll be happy. Yeah. Cause I do like, I love these characters and I love the world. I like that there is a gorilla shrew force out there
Yeah.
that's barely explained.
Yeah, that you're just like, oh, okay, of course, for sure.
Got it. Because you're right, at that point, it's like, well, we do only have 30 pages left, so I guess. And is there a cat that's vegetarian who has a feud?
I do love the vibe of this book. It is like, there's just like so much lacking in it. And I will say, guys, if you're going to read this book, don't do any of the audiobooks. At first I thought I was going to, I'm not an audiobook guy, but for this one, I was like, oh, maybe that'd be fun if I listened to it on audiobook for the reread. And then I listened to the one where that's read by Brian Jakes. And I was like, he was doing some of the most annoying reading I'd ever heard. And he was like, it was so sweet because he clearly was just, he was taking a big swing with every sentence in a way that was exhausting. And then there was another one that was read by a very sultry British man. I'm sorry, I do not know his name, but that one also made me almost fall asleep too much while driving because he was just describing nuts and berries. And ultimately, and it's a thing of like, do you do audiobooks? Have you done the audiobook thing?
Yes, I do a lot of audiobooks. And the Wicked narrator is phenomenal.
Oh,
that's how
okay,
I first
good.
listened to those. And
Oh, cool.
He's the author does the second book, and he has other strengths that are not narrating audiobooks, but still very good.
Yeah, I don't know. Was there
Well,
anything else you noticed on reading these that you thought that was like different from what you expected from both the cover and people talking about this book over the years?
One last thing on the audiobooks, his
Oh, yeah.
sons are involved. Because I haven't looked into the audiobooks at all, but this says he was highly involved in the audiobooks of his works, I think more than probably just that one, even personally enlisting his sons and others to voice Redwall inhabitants.
Oh, yeah. It was one of those everyone has a different voice ones. And
Yeah.
I can't, sometimes those are too distracting for me, which is a personal thing. I love that he got his family involved. It's always good to give your bricklayer son a voice acting role.
Yeah.
We said this.
Get a SAG card.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
I was disappointed by it, which is fine and healthy.
And I just want to say, I'm sorry.
Do not be, because it's like, I'm glad I finally did it. I am going to give this and the two other books I had in the series away. And it's nice to have a little space. You know, that's good. I'm glad that I found the TV show because I can revisit that. And I do remember watching that and like eating Pop-Tarts for breakfast on the floor of my parents' bedroom. Yeah, when I was little. And it makes me, you know, want to reread Mouse Guard because I only read the first two and I only read that once. And I think it just makes me more, it makes the strengths of Despero stand out a lot stronger because that has, there's like so much that Kate DiCamillo, there's a lot that that's about, you know, that's about the beauty of storytelling and incredible ways that we can love each other through our failures and forgiveness. And this book, it also makes me want to go sit in a sunbeam with some honey on some cheese. And that's really valuable too.
Yes. Yes. I love that about this book. And I do want that to be noted. It is like so fascinating to revisit something and being like, oh, I had such a clear impression of what this book was and be like, it was actually completely different, a very different experience. Have there been a lot of books that you've read for this that you have disliked or would you say like very few?
There's a handful. And I think the fun thing is that every time there has been a book that I haven't enjoyed, that I've come on and like by the end of the recording found something really beautiful in it and really redeeming in it. And so that's still true. Like, this was still fun and it's still like a world that I'm happy exists. I'm just gonna maybe like, I would love a graphic novel. I would love the TV show. I would love, you know, Netflix might be, like you said, doing a movie. Would love that. Yeah, I want like big paintings of it.
Yes,
but
it
I
does
don't need to
feel
read
like
it.
book is not the ideal format. It almost feels like a poem. I would love a poem, a cookbook. I mean, cookbook. I genuinely might buy that cookbook. I mean, a Redwall party. That'd be fun. You have a few people over. There you go. That's a nice dinner. And then something good came of a man's life's work. Besides all of the blind children who loved his stories, which is, you know, that's amazing. That's beautiful. But a dinner for six.
Well, would you consider it required reading?
What I consider, I would say it's required that you pick it up in a bookstore, open it to the first page and read the first page and go, I get it. Then at every party for the rest of your life, you can say, I read Redwall.
I did. That's all you need to, I mean, let's take an actual look at this first page.
Yeah, is it even a good first page? I can't remember. Yeah, I think it's him.
Well, I mean, it does have my favorite character detail about Mateus, which is his giant sandals that he's always tripping over.
Yes.
And that's about all that happens. He trips, and then Abbot Mortimer shakes his head, and there are smooth hazelnuts, rolling
See,
on the floor.
Keep the book closed, guys. Pick it up, keep the book closed. Just kind of hold it in your hands, palm it around a little bit, smell it. I would say it's required. Yeah, follow the Twitter account that tweets the Redwall feasts descriptions. That is fun. That's a fun way to break up your feed. But other than that, I think you're good. Because I mean, how many hours would you say this took you to read?
Oof, I don't know. I try to read every book for this podcast in 4 days, just because of my schedule, and I got to the point where I was just reading the first line of every paragraph for about at least half of it.
No, I will say I definitely got to a point where I was like, and I think I get it. I think I got this. And I say as a guy who does not do that a lot,
never.
No, it's true. It's truly, it is just like that. And folks, if there's anyone listening who loves Redwall, because I think if I heard somebody saying what I'm saying right now before I reread it, I think I would be a little upset. And I'd be like, no, it's like a magical book. It's really, I think they're beautiful. Mm-hmm. I think you're wrong. I would beg you to reread it. I do implore you, reread it. But no, I am glad they exist. I got to check out the TV show. And I hope they do more stuff with woodland creatures. If you like this kind of like vibe, there's a great board game actually called Root.
I've heard of it, but I haven't invested in it, but I want a good, cute board game.
It's a little like rules heavy, but it's very fun once you learn it, of like for four people to play like woodland factions, kind of doing light war in the woods. Is like, it's great for that. It's very cute. It's a cute board, cute pieces, very Redwall. Just play that instead.
Nice. Yeah, not required for me. This is, I think, episode 57 of the podcast, and this is the first book I have skimmed.
Wow. That's an honor. Aaron, that is a huge honor. That is amazing. I with my book recommendations, I hope to make more people watch TV. That's my dream.
That's a beautiful legacy to have.
It could have been a sonnet.
He and his son should have just made like a big mural.
Wow, a mural. Walking by a mural, like I would genuinely go upwards of 15, but under 20 minutes out of my way to see a Redwall mural. I would.
Yes.
I would take a photo with it that I would not post, but it would be nice to have.
Just for you. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd eat a Lunchable snack pack in front of it, and that'd be great. And then I'd move about my day.
Yeah. It's a good book for an Uncrustable.
Hopefully about half the pages get stuck together and you just go up, you chalk it up to a loss, and you just keep moving. And you keep moving.
Yep. You will not miss anything. No. Is there anything you'd like to plug as we round out?
Catch me doing stand-up. I'll be back in LA late December. And then Happy Gilmore 2 will be out sometime next year, hopefully.
So congratulations. That's incredible.
Thanks. Yeah, check that out on Netflix. We just finished shooting, so it'll be super fun. Tons of cool people in that. And yeah, give that subscribe to Netflix if you're the one person who hasn't already somehow.
Yep.
I think that's it for me.
Well, thank you so much. I'm gonna stop the recording.
Thank you so much for having me, Aaron.
Thank you so much, Carter. I'm gonna try to get this under 30 seconds. You can support the podcast at buymeacoffee.com/requiredreading. You can follow me everywhere at Aaron R. Bowles. And next week, we are talking Le Petit Prince, The Little Prince. I'll see you then.